Hello and welcome to Democracy In, hosted by me, Mary Layton. In this podcast, we explore the good, the bad, and the frankly weird side of different democratic systems around the world. Today we'll be hearing about democracy in Chile from my two guests, Rodrigo Retamal and Paloma Contreras. Our conversation is going to be divided into two podcast episodes, so if you haven't already heard the first half, go back and check that out now. Well, let's take a moment to talk about what happened in 2019 and the longer history of especially student and workers going on strike and the importance of demonstrations and strikes in Chile. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about how the military has always been involved in politics there, but you also have really young people. And this is something I've always found so impressive and so interesting about Chile. So Paloma, actually, you probably were of the age, right?
Yeah.
Is that your generation?
Yeah. I was in high school when the high school movement started, and then it was in the university, in college, when the higher education social movement started. So it was part of both. And maybe this is why I think that Chile is not conservative.
Right, yes. Because you were part of that generation.
Raised on this generation. And I think that it's a training that many of us got just because we were young in that moment in history. Like the way we think about politics and the way we do politics, mm-hmm. completely different. Like we were making important decisions and participating mm-hmm. when we were 13, 14 years old.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's completely different from how this is seen in the US.
Even
the words people use to refer to young people in the US is usually like kid. I've seen people use it in college. Like 19, 20 year old people, they call them kids. It feels like very adult centric, or like a very, I don't know, like you have to establish a difference from them because they're younger. But for us, we understood them as students, not as kids necessarily.
Yeah.
And I think that probably was possible those very strong and highly approved by society social movements mm-hmm. were possible because mm-hmm. we were students. We don't have a job, we don't have to go and report to a boss that we are not gonna go to work that day because we are on a protest. You also you would think of Salvador Allende saying mm-hmm. being young and not be a revolutionary is even a biological contradiction.
Right.
If you're young, you have to be revolutionary. It wouldn't make sense if you're not.
And yet, I think it's changing slightly now. And I think this is what Nicola was talking about in the British episode. My friend Nicola, who lives in the US and knows the UK. Like, the idea of student having any role, like you and Paloma, you're absolutely right. It's like this idea that they're kids, they're kind of a special species. Mm-hmm. People keep talking about, and I think as biological anthropologists, you probably roll your eyes as much as I do. People are constantly talking about, well, their prefrontal cortex isn't developed. You can't trust anything children say. And you know, this whole idea that if you're under 21, you're irrelevant, you can't possibly say anything sensible or do anything sensible, is really specific to the US and really strange, particularly if you see something like in Chile, like you're saying, from the age of 13, you were and you were taken seriously by other people. I think that's the thing. Mm. The student protests, even of high school students, was respected and taken seriously as a political movement.
Mm-hmm. And it was taken seriously, not because we were young students, but mm-hmm. it just made sense. People are getting training in different political parties and when they're very, mm-hmm. very young. So having a leader that is telling you, like, oh, look at this law, I should change mm-hmm. it because of this and this and that. And we see, like, oh, yeah, like, my school doesn't have, a heating system or...
Heating, yeah.
We're, like, the infrastructure is very, very poor, especially mm-hmm. in public mm-hmm. schools. And we start noticing this, and you're like, wait, but public education is a right. Mm-hmm, why am mm-hmm. I having to live in this situation while people that have mm-hmm. money don't have to live through this? Even if you don't have experience doing politics, you can see that that's not fair. Because starting from there, you know that you can establish solidarity and connections with other students and just gain momentum.
Well, we should just establish for people who are listening to this who have never heard of these movements before. So they started in, when did they start? Like
2006 was the
and
first
six,
one.
yes.
2006, yeah.
The first big
And it
one.
was high school students all across the country, going on strike and having these massive demonstrations
Exactly.
to improve the quality of public education.
Exactly.
That was right. And then, am I right in saying it then sort of took on all sorts of other causes as well, or is that later on?
I think
Did it
that's
stay
later
about
on.
public? Okay, yeah.
Probably, I don't remember. Do you remember the when Patagonia Sin Represas was a huge social movement
Yes, it
too
was a
about.
yeah. Yes. Yeah, because of the environmental too. Yeah, but I don't
Okay,
remember when
interesting.
the what year was. I like 2010, something like
Yeah.
that.
Something like that.
So probably it was the same generation, but where people were organizing around another completely different topic. And then this generation that was part of the social movement in 2006 went to college. And then in college, I think that maybe that's when it starts becoming more like a broader the
A bigger
range of
thing, yeah.
topics, because it included, of course, the right to education, but then like having decent jobs after you
Exactly.
graduate from college is something you have to consider. And then a few years later, I think people defending the right to like fair pension and retirement started these huge protests. So it's like a completely different demographic group of society, but maybe they have the same situation that students have. You have more time, you have maybe
Interesting.
like you don't care as much about the things that can happen to you, because I think that maybe when you're at a certain age, you become more individualistic and you have to fight for your own well-being as an individual.
Or you're too busy, right? If you're struggling just with the day to day of like going for a job, having childcare, like surviving,
Exactly.
then you're too busy to focus on anything. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you can see
That's
how
super
your
interesting.
parents are working all the time, and as a student, you say like, "What? Well, this is not okay." And once you're old, you see, "Oh, I've been working for 25 years, and I don't have a decent pension."
No, that's super interesting. One thing that always interests me about several Latin American countries is that the police were not allowed on campus. And I remember being in the Universidad de Chile one afternoon and there was a big protest going on and like all the students kept running into the gates and the police had to stop like literally at the gates and they were like throwing
Exactly,
things out and they were and that sort of symbolizes it feels like it symbolizes like that students are recognized as like a political entity in some kind of way that needs to be protected.
yes, no, yes, absolutely. But well, even in the high school, they are protected when they make like these strikes. Anyways, the different I don't know the name in English, but the alcalde,
The mayor.
the mayor, they can allow that the police enter to the different
The
colleges,
high
yeah, to the
schools?
high schools. But the university is very strange that it happens. Sometimes that happened. I remember one like many years ago when the police entered to our faculty. And it was like a
Oh,
very,
right.
very, very strange situation. Because
Yeah,
the problem
yeah.
is the police is very violent,
Yes.
and the reaction of the students can be even worse. So they prefer
Of course.
to stop all this kind of violence doing this agreement. But during the strikes in 2006 and after, there are many mayors that allowed the policemen to take,
really?
yes, and to take the students and take them from prison to prison, etc.
Interesting.
Yes. So, but anyways, the thing is, the students, even the, in the high school, they're very involved in political changes. They, we have to understand, to recognize too, that there's many political parties that they influence many students, even in high schools.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Yeah. From the far right to the far left. Yeah. So that
you mean they actually go and try and like campaign to students, even though they can't vote.
Yes. So
interesting.
They have them as members of their political party. So there is like a like a subgroup that is for young people, and they get training on specific things. So like you're in high school, but you're reading Marx and like you know what happened in the entire history of Russia because you're part of the Communist Party. Like the young faction of the Communist Party.
The young so Communist Party. Yeah.
You're reading those things in high school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember when I was like, I don't know, 17, 16, going to different political parties after going to the high school, because they gave me, I don't know, sandwiches. but at the same time, we talk about, I don't know, politics in general.
yeah, it's getting people involved. I keep coming back now, I'm really thinking, Paloma, about how it really represents almost a different idea of what a citizen is, that as a young person, you're still part of the country, you're still a citizen. It's a much broader idea of who should be involved in these kind of conversations and who is worth talking to, right? You can't vote when you're 13, but what you guys are describing, it's like they're still seen as part of the debate.
Mm-hmm. And actually, for the last referendum that we had 10 years ago, people that were 16 years old and older could vote. Mm. And normally in other elections, it's when you are 18 or older.
When you're 18.
A recognition to young people that were leading this social movement in 2019 finally ended up becoming this new constitution. It was like an acknowledgement for their participation and their political relevance in this process.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit then about who is able to vote. Is voting compulsory in Chile?
Well, in this election, it was compulsory, but because it was a referendum trying to vote to the constitution, so something very, very important. And I think it was also a kind of a political movement, like how to say, a political arrangement. Because where the election, if people want to create a new constitution, was not compulsory.
Oh, I see.
And now it was compulsory. And I think it was a very good like a strategy to
get
oblige,
more people.
Exactly, to oblige people that normally they don't vote, so they really are not involved in politics in general, to go to vote. And I think that was a very good strategy for take more votes from the not approval part.
Yeah.
So because normally people that they really don't want to vote, they really don't want any change in general.
I think it can be
a debate.
Yeah, so we think that probably it gave more space and more power to the conservative group that don't even bother to go to vote. But yeah, that's one of the hypotheses.
If normally you don't vote, essentially you're voting for nothing to change. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So is it easy to vote? Is it hard to vote? The experience of going to cast a vote, say in a presidential election, what is involved in that? What happens?
Oh my gosh, this is so different from how it is in the US.
okay, excellent. So tell me.
So you know that like the Super Bowl here, it seems to be the only thing that unites people. That everyone knows what is happening and everything, everyone is talking about it. It's the Super Bowl.
Even if you're not watching it, you know that it's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. In Chile, it's the same, but elections.
Interesting.
Everyone's
okay.
talking about it because it's something that it's like a holiday for us. So like no one works. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to your work on that day. And if you have to work, then you have the right to have a couple hours to go and vote.
Yeah.
And you can demand it and it's protected and people really follow that. is always on a Sunday.
Sunday, right?
People vote in schools or venues for big events. Depending on where you live, usually you go vote in a place that is nearby your where you live. And the military is in charge of keeping everything in order. So that for some people is very traumatic.
Yeah, that's surprising. Yeah.
So they protect the safety and trustworthiness of the process. But yeah, like that day, you know that if people are in the streets, the only thing that they're doing is going to vote. Like that's what everyone is doing. While in the US, it's like a Tuesday.
And it's really hard. It's really hard for people to actually deliberately, it's really hard to actually vote. So I read that men and women vote in different locations. Is that true?
No, nowadays not.
But it used to be?
I think so, but in past, like 1980s, I remember that was a different location. But now you can vote independent of your sex or gender. It's all ordered by the surname.
By the surname. Okay, so you go into your voting location, which is near your house. Then what happens?
Well, it's like you make a long queue, depending.
Yeah, a long line.
And the situation of the vote. Like, because it was a compulsory vote last referendum, it was very large and there was a very long queue. There are a very long line of people. We have to wait a lot to vote. But the process itself is very easy and very fast. You just give your ID credential and they give you a piece of paper and you have to mark one line, vertical line over on a horizontal line. That's it. And after that, there's the counting of votes is something very interesting, because you have people that from different sides, for example, in this case, from the approval or not approval, people that defend the two parts, because many people, they don't understand that you have just to make a line, and they sometimes make a ticket and make different figures on the paper, and they like a dispute the validity of the vote.
Okay.
And it's very fast.
For a presidential election, you still, you know, you it's all by paper still? There's no
electronic
voting? It's
all by paper, yes.
Yeah. And then in that case, who does the counting for like a presidential election?
So first of all, in each location, the people that are working there are choosing like randomly. And once you're chosen, you have to go and work there for the entire day. You get paid.
Do you know, are you told ahead of time you're going to be chosen?
Right.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I think that you have to attend like a training of some kind.
Yeah.
And after that training, you arrive that day, you have all the materials that you need. It's usually five people in one table. So in each table has a number, so you know that you have to vote in this school, and then your table is certain number, so you go to that table. And you will see at least three or from three to five people waiting for you with a book that you have to sign, so they know that you already voted there and you cannot vote twice. You sign that book, you go to a secret chamber, you write your preference, then you fold that paper, you put it on a box, and then that same group of five people at the end of the day are the ones in charge of counting the votes. And that process is public. So
it's public,
next to each table, you will have witnesses, and anyone really can be there.
And you can just turn up and like decide to watch them counting.
Right. So you just see how people are like singing the votes. They're usually very loud, so everyone knows.
People clapping.
So even it's like a soccer game. Like,
so I have to.
People
I have
get
to
really
say.
involved.
This is making sense of something that has confused me for a very long time. So I was in Chile when the election that elected Piñera was going on, and I was sitting at home watching TV, and all that was on TV was images of tables of people counting votes. And I was like, what on earth is going on? And it was like you described, like there was this big crowd of people.
Exactly.
And like a couple of people sitting at the table being like, you know, this vote, this vote, this vote. And people like getting in their business, like looking over and having opinions. It seemed, incredibly public. Like, do you think that having that, like, it's a really direct form of being public. It's like pencil and paper, and there's people, anyone can go and stand there and watch it happening. Do you think that makes people trust the system more?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah,
I think so. This is one of the best institutions in Chile is the votation system, the cervelle, the service of vote, of elections. Yeah. Yes,
I think everyone is very, very proud of that system.
Right.
Because it really works. Like there is no room for doubt, because you are looking at that table and you know exactly how many votes person A got, and then you go online and you check that table and you're like, oh it's the same number, and it can't change, like it you just saw it. I think it's definitely a system that works really well. I think eventually it will need to change and become electronically to some extent. For example, they've been trying to give the option of early voting and voting by mail.
Yeah.
Especially for those of us that are abroad or cannot travel to vote, or people that cannot leave their house.
Exactly.
For any like disability or any reason, really. So opening that option should be something that happens soon, but I think that maybe people will start distrusting it a little bit more once that happens.
So because it's really like, I'm assuming that like each location you can say, okay, we're gonna publicly count up all the votes from the different tables, and then at the end everyone can see that process happening, and then I assume you like telephone it or somehow send that to a central place, so it's each place is getting centralized, but there's the technology is really transparent on every step of the way. That's really fascinating. I had one more question about something specific that I saw. Like, this is like, these questions have been in my head for 10 years. In Mexico, they said that there was a limit to the amount of time you can campaign. Now, am I remembering correctly? That's the same in Chile as well.
Yes.
Like you have to start, you can't start too early and you can't end too early.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
I remembered correctly.
Yes. You have a date for closure of any campaigns. It's made like a parties in general, like a music. I don't know. And it happens like a 2 or 3 days before the votation. Yes.
Is there a date when you can start campaigning as well? Does it all have a limit?
Yes.
So Paloma, presumably like me, if you're sick of the endless, endless campaigning in the US, it must be quite refreshing to have a limit to it.
Yes, but also something I don't like about politics in Chile is that the amount of trash that the campaigns leave is terrible.
Fascinating. Yeah.
The streets are just filled with the faces of different candidates.
Politicians.
Promising things. Yeah, that's a little bit too much.
Too much,
I'm glad it has a limit. Like, you can start one day, you should end it. You cannot start before that or continue after that.
Guys, this has been incredibly interesting, and I think we've been able to discuss some things that are really unique to Chile but are really interesting in comparison to other places, particularly like the involvement of the military and the involvement of students, and also just the transparency of the actual voting system. But I want to end by asking the questions I'm asking all of my guests. So given everything we've talked about, do you feel like you live in a strong democracy? do you feel like you trust and have faith in democracy in Chile right now?
I don't know. From my point of view, we need more like a direct democracy. In general, direct democracy, like the representational democracy made by these parties, these coalitions.
Yeah.
I don't know. It involves a lot of blur. And you realize that all the campaigns, promises mm-hmm. are not really very good accomplished after mm-hmm. after the election. So mm-hmm. These kind of things happen very, very continuously. From my point of view, I think it would be better to vote for things more than for people, like for topics. It would be preferable because, I don't know, you can be, I don't know, more liberal, but also mm-hmm. you would like to agree with abortion, for instance.
Right.
But in this kind of coalitions, you have to like a compromise from very strong and very rigid mm-hmm. ideological mm-hmm. point of view. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I think this representational politics is not very good.
Right.
You are like giving more chances and giving more influence to people mm-hmm. more than things.
Interesting.
I really don't like the president itself, not this president, but in general. I really don't like it. I really don't like, I don't know, the congressman. I would like changes in general. In topics, in general topics. So the people cannot influence in these kind of topics. You have to vote for people that they say that they're going to do things that you like or not. But
yeah.
I don't know. So, in this case, I think, it's democratic in terms of you vote or not vote. It's not like the US that you even have a representative who votes for you. Yeah, no, we vote directly for the people. But the representative system is, from my point of view, it's not really a direct democracy.
That is super interesting. I think that's probably the most radical response I've got to this question, because it's, in a sense, it's a difference between, you're voting for a person who then speaks on your behalf versus people actually voting for things they want to change. So like more like lots of referendums, in a sense. Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating. What about you, Paloma?
Yeah, I also think that it probably is going to be something more common in the future, like mm-hmm. consultas populares or mm-hmm. voting for certain things. Like, we want to mm-hmm. build this, I don't know, like a park in the middle of the city, and people can actually vote for it.
Interesting.
I think that we're going to be making progress to mm-hmm. in that direction in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that there is a strong focus on decentralizing power nowadays. So voting for more representatives in locations that are not Santiago is also something that is very new. Mm-hmm. And I think people like it a lot.
Yeah.
But the question about Chile being a strong democracy or not, I will say yes, because only because I think of other countries and they're so much worse.
That makes sense. I think that's true, though, right?
I think that, like, the at least the system in Chile is, I feel like, it's very transparent in the sense mm-hmm. that you know that the messages that you get are from people in power, and you're voting for people that are already in power, and they're all rich, and they're all part of this group that is like a minority uh-huh. that control everything. But everyone knows it. Even if we keep voting for them.
Yeah.
So it is democratic to some extent. Mm. It doesn't, the big problem is that it doesn't give space for working class in general. Any other minorities don't have space in that system. But I think that people are also aware of that. So probably, I hope this is something that changes in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, on that lovely optimistic note, we can wrap things up, because I think that's a really important thing to end on. It might not be perfect, but at least it's not hypocritical, I think is kind of what you're saying. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. This has been super, super interesting. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about these topics with me. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe, share, or even support us by going to the website www.democracyinpodcast.com. There you'll find more information about the topics discussed today, as well as updates on which countries I will be visiting next.